they were to do that, Lucian had countered, none of the other High Lords would stand with them. They would face the wrath of six courts bearing down on them. No one is that stupid.
Rhysand is that stupid, Ianthe had spat, and with that power of his, he could potentially withstand it. Imagine, she said, voice softening as she had no doubt turned to Tamlin. A day might come when he does not return her. You hear the poisoned lies he whispers in her ear. There are other ways around it, she had added with such quiet venom. We might not be able to deal with him, but there are some friends that I made across the sea.
We are not assassins, Lucian had cut in. Rhys is what he is, but who would take his place? My blood went cold, and I could have sworn ice frosted my fingertips. Lucian had gone on, his tone pleading. Tamlin, Tam, just let her train, let her master this. If the other High Lords do come for her, let her stand a chance.
Silence fell as they let Tamlin consider. My feet began moving the moment I heard the first word out of his mouth, barely more than a growl.
No.
With each step up the stairs, I heard the rest.
We give them no reason to suspect she might have any abilities, which training will surely do. Don't give me that look, Lucian.
Silence again, then a vicious snarl, and a shudder of magic rocked the house. Tamlin's voice had been low, deadly.
Do not push me on this.
I didn't want to know what was happening in that room, what he'd done to Lucian, what Lucian had even looked like to cause that pulse of power. I locked the door to my bedroom and did not bother to eat dinner at all. Tamlin didn't seek me out that night. I wondered if he, Ianthe, and Lucian were still debating my future and the threats against me. There were sentries outside of my bedroom the following afternoon, when I finally dragged myself from bed. According to them, Tamlin and Lucian were already holed up in his study. Without Tamlin's courtiers poking around, the manor was again silent as I, without anything else to do, headed to walk the garden paths I'd followed so many times I was surprised the pale dirt wasn't permanently etched with my footprints. Only my steps sounded in the shining halls as I passed guard after guard, armed to the teeth and trying their best not to gawk at me. Not one spoke to me. Even the servants had taken to keeping to their quarters unless absolutely necessary. Maybe I'd become too slothful. Maybe my lazing about made me more prone to these outbursts. Anyone might have seen me yesterday. And though we'd never spoken of it, Ianthe knew. About the powers. How long had she been aware? The thought of Tamlin telling her? My slippers scuffed on the marble stairs, the chiffon trail of my green gown slithering behind me. Such silence. Too much silence. I needed to get out of this house. Needed to do something. If the villagers didn't want my help, then fine. I could do other things. Whatever they were. I was about to turn down the hall that led to the study, determined to ask Tamlin if there was any task that I might perform, ready to beg him, when the study doors flung open and Tamlin and Lucian emerged, both heavily armed, no sign of Ianthe. You're going so soon? I said, waiting for them to reach the foyer. Tamlin's face was a grim mask as they approached.
There's activity on the western sea border. I have to go.
The one closest to Highburn. Can I come with you? I'd never asked it outright, but... Tamlin paused. Lucian continued past, through the open front doors of the house, barely able to hide his wince.
I'm sorry, Tamlin said, reaching for me.
I stepped out of his grip.
It's too dangerous.
I know how to remain hidden. Just take me with you.
I won't risk our enemies getting their hands on you.
What enemies? Tell me something.
I stared over his shoulder, toward where Lucian lingered in the gravel beyond the house entrance. No horses. I supposed they weren't necessary this time, when they were faster without them. But maybe I could keep up. Maybe I'd wait until they left and... Don't even think about it, Tamlin warned.
My attention snapped to his face.
He growled, Don't even try to come after us.
I can fight, I tried again, a half-truth. A knack for survival wasn't the same as trained skill. Please.
I'd never hated a word more. He shook his head, crossing the foyer to the front doors. I followed him, blurting, "There will always be some threat. There will always be some conflict or enemy or something that keeps me in here." He slowed to a stop just inside the towering oak doors, so lovingly restored after Amarantha's cronies had trashed them.
"You can barely sleep through the night," he said carefully.
I retorted, "Neither can you." But he just plowed ahead. "You can barely handle being around other people."
"You promised!"
My voice cracked, and I didn't care that I was begging. "I need to get out of this house."
"Have Braun take you and Ianthe on a ride."
"I don't want to go for a ride." I splayed my arms. "I don't want to go for a ride or a picnic or pick wildflowers. I want to do something. So take me with you."
That girl who had needed to be protected, who had craved stability and comfort, she had died under the mountain. I had died, and there had been no one to protect me from those horrors before my neck snapped. So I had done it myself, and I would not, could not, yield that part of me that had awoken and transformed under the mountain. Tamlin had gotten his powers back, had become whole again, become that protector and provider he wished to be. I was not the human girl who needed coddling and pampering, who wanted luxury and easiness. I didn't know how to go back to craving those things, to be docile. Tamlin's claws punched out.
"Even if I risked it, your untrained abilities render your presence more of a liability than anything."
It was like being hit with stones, so hard I could feel myself cracking. But I lifted my chin and said,
"I'm coming along, whether you want me to or not."
"No, you aren't."
He strode right through the door, his claws slashing the air at his sides, and was halfway down the steps before I reached the threshold, where I slammed into an invisible wall. I staggered back, trying to reorder my mind around the impossibility of it. It was identical to the one I'd built that day in the study, and I searched inside the shards of my soul, my heart, for a tether to that shield, wondering if I'd blocked myself, but there was no power emanating from me. I reached a hand to the open air of the doorway and met solid resistance.
"Tamlin,"
I rasped. But he was already down the front drive, walking toward the looming iron gates. Lucien remained at the foot of the stairs, his face so, so pale.
"Tamlin,"
I said again, pushing against the wall. He didn't turn. I slammed my hand into the invisible barrier. No movement. Nothing but hardened air. And I had not learned about my own powers enough to try to push through, to shatter it. I had let him convince me not to learn those things, for his sake.
"Don't bother trying,"
Lucien said softly, as Tamlin cleared the gates and vanished, winnowed.
"He shielded the entire house around you. Others can go in and out, but you can't. Not until he lifts the shield."
He'd locked me in here. I hit the shield again. Again. Nothing.
"Just be patient, Feyre,"
Lucien tried, wincing as he followed after Tamlin.
"Please, I'll see what I can do. I'll try again."
I barely heard him over the roar in my ears. Didn't wait to see him pass the gates and winnow too. He'd locked me in. He'd sealed me inside this house. I hurtled for the nearest window in the foyer and shoved it open. A cool spring breeze rushed in, and I shoved my hand through it, only for my fingers to bounce off an invisible wall. Smooth, hard air pushed against my skin. Breathing became difficult. I was trapped. I was trapped inside this house. I might as well have been under the mountain. I might as well have been inside that cell again. I backed away, my steps too light, too fast, and slammed into the oak table in the center of the foyer. None of the nearby sentries came to investigate. He'd trapped me in here. He'd locked me up. I stopped seeing the marble floor, or the paintings on the walls, or the sweeping staircase looming behind me. I stopped hearing the chirping of the spring birds, or the sighing of the breeze through the curtains. And then crushing black pounded down and rose up from beneath, devouring and roaring and shredding. It was all I could do to keep from screaming, to keep from shattering into 10,000 pieces as I sank onto the marble floor, bowing over my knees and wrapped my arms around myself. He'd trapped me.
He'd trapped me. He'd trapped me. I had to get out, because I barely escaped from another prison once before, and this time... Winnowing. I could vanish into nothing but air and appear somewhere else, somewhere open and free. I fumbled for my power, for anything, something that might show me the way to do it, the way out. Nothing. There was nothing, and I had become nothing, and I couldn't ever get out. Someone was shouting my name from far away. Alice. Alice. But I was ensconced in a cocoon of darkness and fire and ice and wind, a cocoon that melted the ring off my finger until the golden ore dripped away into the void, the emerald tumbling after it. I wrapped that raging force around myself as if I could keep the walls from crushing me entirely, and maybe buy me the tiniest sip of air. I couldn't get out. I couldn't get out. I couldn't get out. Slender, strong hands gripped me under the shoulders. I didn't have the strength to fight them off. One of those hands moved to my knees, the other to my back, and then I was being lifted, held against what was unmistakably a female body. I couldn't see her, didn't want to see her. Amarantha, come to take me away again, come to kill me at last. There were words being spoken around me, two women. Neither of them was Amarantha. Please, please take care of her. Alice. From right by my ear, the other replied, Consider yourselves very, very lucky that your High Lord was not here when we arrived. Your guards will have one hell of a headache when they wake up, but they're alive. Be grateful. More held me, carried me. The darkness guttered long enough that I could draw breath, that I could see the garden door she walked toward. I opened my mouth, but she peered down at me and said, Did you think his shield would keep us from you? Rhys shattered it with half a thought. But I didn't spy Rhys anywhere, not as the darkness swirled back in. I clung to her, trying to breathe, to think. You're free, Moore said tightly. You're free. Not safe, not protected, free. She carried me beyond the garden, into the fields, up a hill, down it, and into a cave. I must have started bucking and thrashing in her arms, because she said, You're out, you're free, again and again and again, as true darkness swallowed us. Half a heartbeat later, she emerged into sunlight, bright strawberry and grass-scented sunlight. I had a thought that this might be summer. Then a low, vicious growl split the air before us, cleaving even my darkness. I did everything by the book, Moore said to the owner of that growl. I was passed from her arms to someone else's, and I struggled to breathe, fought for any trickle of air down my lungs, until Rhysand said, Then we're done here. Wind tore at me, along with ancient darkness. But a sweeter, softer shade of night caressed me, stroking my nerves, my lungs, until I could at last get air inside, until it seduced me into sleep. Chapter 13. I woke to sunlight, an open space, nothing but clear sky and snow-capped mountains around me, and Rhysand lounging in an armchair across from the couch where I was sprawled, gazing at the mountains, his face uncharacteristically solemn. I swallowed, and his head whipped toward me. No kindness in his eyes, nothing but unending icy rage. But he blinked, and it was gone, replaced by, perhaps, relief, exhaustion, and the pale sunlight warming the moonstone floors. Dawn. It was dawn. I didn't want to think about how long I'd been unconscious. What happened? I said. My voice was hoarse, as if I'd been screaming.
You were screaming, he said.
I didn't care if my mental shield was up or down or completely shattered.
You also managed to scare the shit out of every servant and sentry in Tamlin's manor when you wrapped yourself in darkness and they couldn't see you.
My stomach hollowed out. Did I hurt any?
No. Whatever you did, it was contained to you.
You weren't
By law and protocol, he said, stretching out his long legs, things would have become very complicated and very messy if I had been the one to walk into that house and take you. Smashing that shield was fine, but Moore had to go in on her own 2 feet, render the sentries unconscious through her own power, and carry you over the border to another court before I could bring you here. Or else Tamlin would have free rein to march his forces into my lands to reclaim you. And as I have no interest in an internal war, we had to do everything by the book.
That's what Moore had said, that she did everything by the book. But when I go back,
as your presence here isn't part of our monthly requirement, you are under no obligation to go back. He rubbed at his temple, unless you wish to.
The question settled in me like a stone sinking to the bottom of a pool. There was such quiet in me, such nothingness. He locked me in that house, I managed to say.
A shadow of mighty wings spread behind Reese's chair, but his face was calm as he said, I know. I felt you, even with your shields up, for once.
I made myself meet his stare. I have nowhere else to go.
It was both a question and a plea. He waved a hand, the wings fading. Stay here for however long you want. Stay here forever, if you feel like it.
I need to go back at some point.
Say the word and it's done.
He meant it, too. Even if I could tell from the ire in his eyes that he didn't like it, he'd bring me back to the spring court the moment I asked. Bring me back to silence, and those centuries, and a life of doing nothing but dressing and dining and planning parties. He crossed his ankle over a knee.
I made you an offer when you first came here. Help me, and food, shelter, clothing, all of it is yours.
I'd been a beggar in the past, the thought of doing it now.
Work for me, Rhysand said. I owe you anyway, and we'll figure out the rest day by day, if need be.
I looked toward the mountains, as if I could see all the way to the spring court in the south. Tamlin would be furious. He'd shred the manor apart. But he'd locked me up. Either he so deeply misunderstood me, or he'd been so broken by what went on under the mountain, but he'd locked me up.
I'm not going back.
The words rang in me like a death now. Not until I figure things out. I shoved against the wall of anger and sorrow and outright despair as my thumb brushed over the vacant band of skin where that ring had once sat. One day at a time. Maybe Tamlin would come around, heal himself, that jagged wound a festering fear. Maybe I'd sort myself out. I didn't know. But I did know that if I stayed in that manor, if I was locked up one more time, it might finish the breaking that Amarantha had started.
Rhysand summoned a mug of hot tea from nowhere and handed it to me. Drink it.
I took the mug, letting its warmth soak into my stiff fingers. He watched me until I took a sip, and then went back to monitoring the mountains. I took another sip, peppermint and licorice and another herb or spice. I wasn't going back. Maybe I'd never even gotten to come back. Not from under the mountain.
When the mug was half finished, I fished for something, anything to say, to keep the crushing silence at bay.
The darkness, is that part of the power you gave me?
One would assume so.
I drained the rest of the mug. No wings?
If you inherited some of Tamlin's shapeshifting, perhaps you can make wings of your own.
A shiver went down my spine at the thought, at the claws I'd grown that day with Lucien. And the other High Lords? Ice, that's winter. That shield I once made of hardened wind. Who did that come from? What might the others have given me? Is winnowing tied to any one of you in particular?
He considered. Wind? The day court, likely. And winnowing, it's not confined to any court. It's wholly dependent on your own reserve of power and training.
I didn't feel like mentioning how spectacularly I'd failed to even move an inch.
And as for the gifts you got from everyone else, that's for you to find out, I suppose.
I should have known your goodwill would wear off after a minute.
Rhys let out a low chuckle and got to his feet, stretching his muscled arms over his head and rolling his neck, as if he'd been sitting there for a long, long while, for the entirety of the night.
Rest a day or two, Feyre,
he said, then take on the task of figuring out everything else. I have business in another part of my lands. I'll be back by the end of the week.
Despite how long I'd slept, I was so tired. Tired in my bones, in my crumpled heart.
When I didn't reply, Rhys strode off between the moonstone pillars. And I saw how I would spend the next few days. In solitude, with nothing to do and only my own horrible thoughts for company. I began speaking before I could reconsider.
Take me with you.
Rhys halted as he pushed through two purple gossamer curtains, and slowly he turned back.
You should rest.
I've rested enough, I said, setting down the empty mug and standing. My head spun slightly. When had I last eaten?
Wherever you're going, whatever you're doing, take me along. I'll stay out of trouble, just...
Please.
I hated the last word, choked on it. It hadn't done anything to sway Tamlin. For a long moment, Rhys said nothing. Then he prowled toward me, his long stride eating up the distance and his face set like stone.
If you come with me, there is no going back. You will not be allowed to speak of what you see to anyone outside of my court. Because if you do, people will die. My people will die. So if you come, you will have to lie about it forever. If you return to the Spring Court, you cannot tell anyone there what you see, and who you meet, and what you will witness. If you would rather not have that between you and your friends, then stay here.
Stay here. Stay locked up in the Spring Court. My chest was a gaping, open wound. I wondered if I'd bleed out from it, if a spirit could bleed out and die. Maybe that had already happened.
Take me with you. I breathed. I won't tell anyone what I see, even them. I couldn't bear to say his name.
Rhys studied me for a few heartbeats, and finally, he gave me a half smile.
We leave in 10 minutes. If you want to freshen up, go ahead.
An unusually polite reminder that I probably looked like the dead. I felt like it. But I said,
where are we going?
Rhys's smile widened into a grin.
To Valaris, the City of Starlight.
The moment I entered my room, the hollow quiet returned, washing away with it any questions I might have had about a city. Everything had been destroyed by Amarantha. If there were a city in Prithian, I would no doubt be visiting a ruin.
I jumped into the bath, scrubbing down as swiftly as I could, then hurried into the night court clothes that had been left for me. My motions were mindless, each one some feeble attempt to keep from thinking about what had happened, what Tamlin had tried to do and had done, what I had done. By the time I returned to the main atrium, Rhys was leaning against a moonstone pillar, picking at his nails. He merely said,
"That was 15 minutes,
before extending a hand. I had no glimmering ember to even try to look like I cared about his taunting before we were swallowed by the roaring darkness. Wind and night and stars wheeled by as he winnowed us through the world, and the calluses of his hand scratched against my own fading ones before sunlight, not starlight, greeted me. Squinting at the brightness, I found myself standing in what was unmistakably a foyer of someone's house. The ornate red carpet cushioned the one step I staggered away from him as I surveyed the warm wood-paneled walls, the artwork, the straight white oak staircase ahead. Flanking us were two rooms. On my left, a sitting room with a black marble fireplace, lots of comfortable, elegant but worn furniture, and bookshelves built into every wall. On my right, a dining room with a long cherrywood table big enough for 10 people, small compared to the dining room at the manor. Down the slender hallway ahead were a few more doors, ending in one that I assumed would lead to a kitchen. A townhouse. I'd visited one once, when I was a child, and my father had brought me along to the largest town in our territory. It had belonged to a fantastically wealthy client, and had smelled like coffee and mothballs. A pretty place, but stuffy, formal. This house was a home that had been lived in and enjoyed and cherished. And it was in a city. Part 2. The House of Wind. Chapter 14.
Welcome to my home, Rhysand said.
A city, a world lay out there. Morning sunlight streamed through the windows lining the front of the townhouse. The ornately carved wood door before me was inset with fogged glass that peeked into a small antechamber and the actual front door beyond it, shut and solid against whatever city lurked beyond. And the thought of setting foot out into it, into the leering crowds, seeing the destruction Amarantha had likely wreaked upon them. A heavy weight pressed into my chest. I hadn't dredged up the focus to ask until now, hadn't given an ounce of room to consider that this might be a mistake, but what is this place? Rhys leaned a broad shoulder against the carved oak threshold that led into the sitting room and crossed his arms.
This is my house. Well, I have two homes in the city. One is for more official business, but this is only for me and my family.
I listened for any servants, but heard none. Good. Maybe that was good, rather than having people weeping and gawking.
Nuala and Caradwyn are here, he said, reading my glance down the hall behind us. But other than that, it'll just be the two of us.
I tensed. It wasn't that things had been any different at the Night Court itself, but this house was much, much smaller. There would be no escaping him, save for the city outside. There were no cities left in our mortal territory, though some had sprung up on the main continent, full of art and learning and trade. Elaine had once wanted to go with me. I didn't suppose I'd ever get that chance now. Rhysand opened his mouth, but then the silhouettes of two tall, powerful bodies appeared on the other side of the front door's fogged glass. One of them banged on it with a fist.
Hurry up, you lazy ass,
a deep male voice drawled from the antechamber beyond. Exhaustion drugged me so heavily that I didn't particularly care that there were wings peeking over their two shadowy forms. Rhys didn't so much as blink toward the door.
Two things, Feyre darling.
The pounding continued, followed by the second male murmuring to his companion.
If you're going to pick a fight with him, do it after breakfast.
That voice, like shadows given form, dark and smooth and cold.
I wasn't the one who hauled me out of bed just now to fly down here,
the first one said, then added,
busybody.
I could have sworn a smile tugged on Rhys's lips as he went on.
No one, but Mor and I are able to winnow directly inside this house. It is warded, shielded, and then warded some more. Only those I wish, and you wish, may enter. You are safe here. And safe anywhere in the city, for that matter. Valaris's walls are well protected and have not been breached in 5,000 years. No one with ill intent enters this city unless I allow it. So go where you wish, do what you wish, and see who you wish. Those two in the antechamber, he added, eyes sparkling, might not be on that list of people you should bother knowing if they keep banging on the door like children.
Another pound, emphasized by the first male voice saying,
You know we can hear you, prick.
Secondly, Rhys went on, in regard to the two bastards at my door, it's up to you whether you want to meet them now, or head upstairs like a wise person, take a nap, since you're still looking a little peaky, and then change into city-appropriate clothing, while I beat the hell out of one of them for talking to his high lord like that. There was such light in his eyes, it made him look younger, somehow. More mortal. So at odds with the icy rage I'd seen earlier when I awoken. Awoken on that couch, and then decided I wasn't returning home. Decided that, perhaps, the Spring Court might not be my home. I was drowning in that old heaviness, clawing my way up to a surface that might not ever exist. I'd slept for the mother knew how long, and yet, just come get me when they're gone. That joy dimmed, and Rhys looked like he might say something else, but a female voice, crisp and edged, now sounded behind the two males in the antechamber.
You Illyrians are worse than cats yowling to be let in the back door.
The knob jangled. She sighed sharply.
Really, Rhysand, you locked us out.
Fighting to keep that immense heaviness at bay a bit longer, I made for the stairs, at the top of which now stood Nuala and Caradwen, wincing at the front door. I could have sworn Caradwen subtly gestured me to hurry up, and I might have kissed both twins for that bit of normalcy. I might have kissed Rhys, too, for waiting to open the front door until I was halfway down the cerulean blue hallway on the second level. All I heard was that first male voice declare, "Welcome home, bastard," followed by the shadowy male voice saying, "I sensed you were back. More filled me in, but I..." That strange female voice cut him off.
"Send your dogs out in the yard to play, Rhysand. You and I have matters to discuss."
That midnight voice said with quiet cold that licked down my spine, "As do I." Then the cocky one drawled to her, "We were here first. Wait your turn, tiny ancient one." On either side of me, Nuala and Caradwen flinched, either from holding in laughter or some vestige of fear, or perhaps both. Definitely both, as a feminine snarl sliced through the house, albeit a bit half-heartedly. The upstairs hall was punctuated with chandeliers of swirled colored glass, illuminating the few polished doors on either side. I wondered which belonged to Rhysand, and then wondered which one belonged to Moore, as I heard her yawn amid the fray below. "Why is everyone here so early? I thought we were meeting tonight at the house." Below, Rhysand grumbled. Grumbled? "Trust me, there's no party, only a massacre, if Cassian doesn't shut his mouth." "We're hungry," that first male, Cassian, complained. "Feed us. Someone told me there'd be breakfast."
"Pathetic,"
that strange female voice quipped.
"You idiots are pathetic."
Moore said, "We know that's true, but is there food?" I heard the words, heard and processed them, and then they floated into the blackness of my mind. Nuala and Caradwen opened a door, leading to a fire-warmed, sunlit room. It faced a wall, winter-kissed garden in the back of the townhouse, the large windows peering over the sleeping stone fountain in its center, drained for the season. Everything in the bedroom itself was of rich wood and soft white, with touches of subtle sage. It felt, strangely enough, almost human. And the bed, massive, plush, adorned in quilts and duvets of cream and ivory to keep out the winter chill, that looked the most welcoming of all. But I wasn't so far gone that I couldn't ask a few basic questions, to at least give myself the illusion of caring a bit about my own welfare. "Who was that?" I managed to say as they shut the door behind us. Nuala headed for the small attached bathing room. White marble, a clawfoot tub, more sunny windows that overlooked the garden wall, and the thick line of cypress trees that stood watch behind it. Caradwen, already stalking for the armoire, cringed a bit and said over a shoulder,
"They're Rhysand's inner circle."
The ones I'd heard mentioned that day at the night court, who Rhys kept going to meet. "I wasn't aware that High Lords kept things so casual," I admitted.
"They don't,"
Nuala said, returning from the bathing room with a brush.
"But Rhysand does."
Apparently, my hair was a mess, because Nuala brushed it as Caradwen pulled out some ivory sleeping clothes, a warm and soft lace-trimmed top and pants. I took in the clothes, then the room, then the winter garden and the slumbering fountain beyond, and Rhysand's earlier words clicked into place. "The walls of this city have not been breached for 5,000 years.
Meaning Amarantha.
How is this city here? I met Nuala's gaze in the mirror. How did it survive? Nuala's face tightened, and her dark eyes flicked to her twin, who slowly rose from a dresser drawer, fleece-lined slippers for me in hand. Caradwen's throat bobbed as she swallowed.
"The High Lord is very powerful," Caradwen said, carefully, "and was devoted to his people long before his father's mantle passed to him."
"How did it survive?" I pushed. A city, a lovely one if the sounds from my window, the garden beyond it, were any indication, lay all around me, untouched, whole, safe, while the rest of the world had been left to ruin. The twins exchanged looks again, some silent language they'd learned in the womb passing between them. Nuala set down the brush on the vanity.
It is not for us to tell.
He asked you not to—
No,
Caradwyn interrupted, folding back the covers of the bed.
The High Lord made no such demand, but what he did to shield this city is his story to tell, not ours. We would be more comfortable if he told you, lest we get any of it wrong.
I glared between them. Fine, fair enough. Caradwyn moved to shut the curtains, sealing the room in darkness. My heart stumbled, taking my anger with it, and I blurted, "Leave them open." I couldn't be sealed up and shut in darkness. Not yet. Caradwyn nodded and left the curtains open, both of the twins telling me to send word if I needed anything before they departed. Alone, I slid into the bed, hardly feeling the softness, the smoothness of the sheets. I listened to the crackling fire, the chirp of birds in the garden's potted evergreens, so different from the spring sweet melodies I was used to, that I might never hear or be able to endure again. Maybe Amarantha had won after all, and some strange new part of me wondered if my never returning might be a fitting punishment for him, for what he had done to me. Sleep claimed me, swift and brutal and deep. Chapter 15. I awoke 4 hours later. It took me minutes to remember where I was, what had happened, and each tick of the little clock on the rosewood writing desk was a shove back, back, back into that heavy dark. But at least I wasn't tired, weary, but no longer on the cusp of feeling like sleeping forever. I'd think about what happened at the Spring Court later. Tomorrow, never. Mercifully, Rhysand's inner circle left before I'd finished dressing. Rhys was waiting at the front door, which was open to the small wooden marble antechamber, which in turn was open to the street beyond. He ran an eye over me, from the suede navy shoes, practical and comfortably made, to the knee-length sky-blue coat, to the braid that began on one side of my head and curved around the back. Beneath the coat, my usual flimsy attire had been replaced by thicker, warmer brown pants and a pretty cream sweater that was so soft I could have slept in it. Knitted gloves that matched my shoes had already been stuffed into the coat's deep pockets. "Those two certainly like to fuss," Rhysand said, though something about it was strained as we headed out the front door. Each step toward that bright threshold was both an eternity and an invitation. For a moment, the weight in me vanished as I gobbled down the details of the emerging city. Buttery sunlight that softened the already mild winter day, a small manicured front lawn, its dried grass near white, bordered with a waist-high wrought iron fence and empty flower beds, all leading toward a clean street of pale cobblestones. High fae in various forms of dress meandered by, some in coats like mine to ward against the crisp air, some wearing mortal fashions with layers and poofy skirts and lace, some in riding leathers, all unhurried as they breathed in the salt and lemon verbena breeze that even winter couldn't chase away. Not one of them looked toward the house, as if they either didn't know or weren't worried that their own High Lord dwelled in one of the many marble townhouses lining either side of the street, each capped with a green copper roof and pale chimneys that puffed tendrils of smoke into the brisk sky. In the distance, children shrieked with laughter. I staggered to the front gate, unlatching it with fumbling fingers that hardly registered the ice-cold metal, and took all of 3 steps into the street before I halted at the sight of the other end. The street sloped down, revealing more pretty townhouses and puffing chimneys, more well-fed, unconcerned people. And at the very bottom of the hill curved a broad, winding river, sparkling like deepest sapphire, snaking toward a vast expanse of water beyond. The sea. The city had been built like a crust atop the rolling, steep hills that flanked the river, the buildings crafted from white marble or warm sandstone, Ships with sails of varying shapes loitered in the river, the white wings of birds shining brightly above them in the midday sun. No monsters, no darkness, not a hint of fear, of despair. Untouched.
The city has not been breached in 5,000 years.
Even during the height of her dominance over Prithian, whatever Rhys had done, whatever he'd sold or bartered, Amarantha truly had not touched this place. The rest of Prithian had been shredded, then left to bleed out over the course of 50 years, yet Velaris. My fingers curled into fists. I sensed something looming and gazed down the other end of the street. There, like eternal guardians of the city, towered a wall of flat-topped mountains of red stone, the same stone that had been used to build some of the structures. They curved around the northern edge of Velaris, to where the river bent toward them, and flowed into their shadow. To the north, different mountains surrounded the city across the river. A range of sharp peaks like fish's teeth cleaved the city's merry hills from the sea beyond. But these mountains behind me, they were sleeping giants, somehow alive, awake. As if in answer, that undulating, slithering power slid along my bones, like a cat brushing against my legs for attention. I ignored it.
"The middle peak," Rhys said from behind me, and I whirled, remembering he was there.
He just pointed toward the largest of the plateaus. Holes and windows seemed to have been built into the uppermost part of it. And flying toward it, borne on large, dark wings, were two figures.
"That's my other home in this city, the House of Wind."
Sure enough, the flying figures swerved on what looked to be a wicked, fast current.
"We'll be dining there tonight," he added, and I couldn't tell if he sounded irritated or resigned about it.
And I didn't quite care. I turned toward the city again and said,
"How?"
He understood what I meant.
"Luck."
"Luck? Yes, how lucky for you," I said quietly, but not weakly, "that the rest of Prithian was ravaged while your people, your city, remained safe." The wind ruffled Rhys's dark hair, his face unreadable.
"Did you even think for one moment,"
I said, my voice like gravel, "to extend that luck to anywhere else? Anyone else?"
"Other cities," he said calmly, "are known to the world. Velaris has remained secret beyond the borders of these lands for millennia. Amarantha did not touch it because she did not know it existed. None of her beasts did. No one in the other courts knows of its existence either."
"How?"
"Spells and wards and my ruthless, ruthless ancestors, who were willing to do anything to preserve a piece of goodness in our wretched world."
"And when Amarantha came," I said, nearly spitting her name, "you didn't think to open this place as a refuge?"
"When Amarantha came," he said, his temper slipping the leash a bit as his eyes flashed, "I had to make some very hard choices, very quickly."
I rolled my eyes, twisting away to scan the rolling steep hills, the sea far beyond. "I'm assuming you won't tell me about it." But I had to know. How he'd managed to save this slice of peace and beauty.
"Now's not the time for that conversation."
Fine. I'd heard that sort of thing 1,000 times before at the Spring Court anyway. It wasn't worth dredging up the effort to push about it. But I wouldn't sit in my room, couldn't allow myself to mourn and mope and weep and sleep. So I would venture out, even if it was an agony, even if the size of this place... cauldron, it was enormous. I jerked my chin toward the city sloping down toward the river. "So what is there that was worth saving at the cost of everyone else?" When I faced him, his blue eyes were as ruthless as the churning winter sea in the distance.
"Everything," he said.
Rhysand wasn't exaggerating. There was everything to see in Velaris, tea shops with delicate tables and chairs scattered outside their cheery fronts, surely heated by some warming spell, all full of chattering, laughing high fae, and a few strange, beautiful fairies. There were 4 main market squares, palaces they were called, 2 on this side, the southern side, of the Sidra River, 2 on the northern. In the hours that we wandered, I only made it to two of them. Great white-stoned squares flanked by the pillars supporting the carved and painted buildings that watched over them, and provided a covered walkway beneath for the shops built into the street level. The first market we entered, the Palace of Thread and Jewels, sold clothes, shoes, supplies for making both, and jewelry, endless sparkling jewelers' shops. Yet nothing inside me stirred at the glimmer of sunlight on the undoubtedly rare fabric swaying in the chill river breeze, at the clothes displayed in the broad glass windows, or the luster of gold and ruby and emerald and pearl nestled on velvet beds. I didn't dare glance at the now empty finger on my left hand. Rhys entered a few of the jewelry shops, looking for a present for a friend, he said. I chose to wait outside each time, hiding in the shadows beneath the palace buildings. Walking around today was enough. Introducing myself, enduring the gawking and tears and judgment. If I had to deal with that, I might very well climb into bed and never get out. But no one on the streets looked twice at me, even at Rhysand's side. Perhaps they had no idea who I was. Perhaps city dwellers didn't care who was in their midst. The second market, the Palace of Bone and Salt, was one of the twin squares, one on this side of the river, the other one, the Palace of Hoof and Leaf, across it, both crammed with vendors selling meat, produce, prepared foods, livestock, confections, spices. So many spices, scents familiar and forgotten from those precious years when I had known the comfort of an invisible father and bottomless wealth. Rhysand kept a few steps away, hands in his pockets as he offered bits of information every now and then. Yes, he told me, many stores and homes used magic to warm them, especially popular outdoor spaces. I didn't inquire further about it. No one avoided him. No one whispered about him or spat on him or stroked him as they had under the mountain. Rather, the people that spotted him offered warm, broad smiles. Some approached, gripping his hand to welcome him back. He knew each of them by name, and they addressed him by his. But Rhys grew ever quieter as the afternoon pressed on. We paused at the edge of a brightly painted pocket of the city, built atop one of the hills that flowed right to the river's edge. I took one look at the first storefront, and my bones turned brittle. The cheery door was cracked open to reveal art and paints and brushes and little sculptures. Rhys said, "This is what Valaris is known for, the artist's quarter. You'll find 100 galleries, supply stores, potter's compounds, sculpture gardens, and anything in between. They call it the Rainbow of Valaris. The performing artists, the musicians, the dancers, the actors, dwell on that hill right across the Sidra. You see the bit of gold glinting near the top? That's one of the main theaters. There are 5 notable ones in the city, but that's the most famous. And then, there are the smaller theaters, and the amphitheater on the sea cliffs." He trailed off as he noticed my gaze drifting back to the assortment of bright buildings ahead. High fae and various lesser fairies I'd never encountered and didn't know the names of wandered the streets. It was the latter that I noticed more than the others, some long-limbed, hairless, and glowing as if an inner moon dwelled beneath their night-dark skin. Some covered in opalescent scales that shifted color with each graceful step of their clawed, webbed feet. Some elegant, wild puzzles of horns and hoofs and striped fur. Some were bundled in heavy overcoats, scarves, and mittens. Others strode about in nothing but their scales and fur and talons, and didn't seem to think twice about it. Neither did anyone else. All of them, however, were preoccupied with taking in the sights, some shopping, some splattered with clay and dust and paint. Artists. I'd never called myself an artist, never thought that far or that grandly, but where all that color and light and texture had once dwelled, there was only a filthy prison cell. "I'm tired," I managed to say. I could feel Rhys's gaze, didn't care if my shield was up or down to ward against him reading my thoughts, but he only said, "We can come back another day. It's almost time for dinner anyway." Indeed, The sun was sinking toward where the river met the sea beyond the hills, staining the city pink and gold. I didn't feel like painting that either. Even as people stopped to admire the approaching sunset, as if the residents of this place, this court, had the freedom, the safety of enjoying the sights whenever they wished, and had never known otherwise. I wanted to scream at them, wanted to pick up a loose piece of cobblestone and shatter the nearest window, wanted to unleash that power again boiling beneath my skin, and tell them, show them, what had been done to me, to the rest of the world, while they admired sunsets and painted and drank tea by the river.
Easy,
Rhys murmured. I whipped my head to him, my breathing a bit jagged. His face had again become unreadable.
My people are blameless.
That easily, my rage vanished, as if it had slipped a rung of the ladder it had been steadily climbing inside me and splattered on the pale stone street. Yes. Yes, of course they were blameless, but I didn't feel like thinking more on it, on anything. I said again, I'm tired. His throat bobbed, but he nodded, turning from the rainbow.
Tomorrow night, we'll go for a walk. Valaris is lovely in the day, but it was built to be viewed after dark.
I'd expect nothing less from the City of Starlight, but words had again become difficult. But dinner? With him, at that House of Wind, I mustered enough focus to say, who exactly is going to be at this dinner? Rhys led us up a steep street, my thighs burning with the movement. Had I become so out of shape, so weakened?
My inner circle, he said. I want you to meet them before you decide if this is a place you'd like to stay, if you'd like to work with me, and thus work with them. More you've met, but the three others...
The ones who came this afternoon.
A nod. Cassian, Azriel, and Amryn.
Who are they? He'd said something about Illyrians, but Amryn, the female voice I'd heard, hadn't possessed wings, at least ones I'd glimpsed through the fogged glass.
There are tears, he said neutrally, within our circle. Amryn is my second in command.
A female? The surprise must have been written on my face, because Rhys said,
Yes, and Mor is my third. Only a fool would think my Illyrian warriors were the apex predators in our circle.
Irreverent, cheerful Mor was third to the High Lord of the Night Court. Rhys went on,
You'll see what I mean when you meet Amryn. She looks high fey, but something different prowls beneath her skin.
Rhys nodded to a passing couple, who bowed their heads in merry greeting.
She might be older than this city, but she's vain and likes to hoard her baubles and belongings like a fire drake in a cave. So, be on your guard. You both have tempers when provoked, and I don't want you to have any surprises tonight.
Some part of me didn't want to know what manner of creature exactly she was. So, if we get into a brawl and I rip off her necklace, she'll roast and eat me? He chuckled.
No, Amryn would do far, far worse things than that. The last time Amryn and Mor got into it, they left my favorite mountain retreat in cinders.
He lifted a brow. For what it's worth, I'm the most powerful High Lord in Prithian's history, and merely interrupting Amryn is something I've only done once in the past century. The most powerful High Lord in history. In the countless millennia they had existed here in Prithian, Rhys. Rhys, with his smirking and sarcasm and bedroom eyes. And Amryn was worse, and older than 5,000 years. I waited for the fear to hit, waited for my body to shriek to find a way to get out of this dinner, but nothing. Maybe it'd be a mercy to be ended. A broad hand gripped my face, gently enough not to hurt, but hard enough to make me look at him.
Don't you ever think that,
Rhysand hissed, his eyes livid, not for one damned moment. That bond between us went taut, and my lingering mental shields collapsed, and for a heartbeat, just as it had happened under the mountain, I flashed from my body to his, from my eyes to his own. I had not realized how I looked. My face was gaunt, my cheekbones sharp, my blue-gray eyes dull and smudged with purple beneath. The full lips, my father's mouth, were wan, and my collarbones jutted above the thick wool neckline of my sweater. I looked as if rage and grief and despair had eaten me alive, as if I was again starved, not for food, but for joy and life. Then I was back in my body, seething at him. Was that a trick? His voice was hoarse as he lowered his hand from my face.
No.
He angled his head to the side.
How did you get through it? My shield.
I didn't know what he was talking about. I hadn't done anything, just slipped. And I didn't want to talk about it, not here, not with him.
I stormed into a walk, my legs so damn thin, so useless, burning with every step up the steep hill.
He gripped my elbow, again with that considerate gentleness, but strong enough to make me pause.
How many other minds have you accidentally slipped into?
Lucien?
Lucien! A short laugh. What a miserable place to be.
A low snarl rippled from me. Do not go into my head.
Your shield is down. I hauled it back up. You might as well have been shouting his name at me.
Again, that contemplative angling of his head.
Perhaps you having my power.
He chewed on his bottom lip, then snorted.
It'd make sense, of course, if the power came from me. If my own shield sometimes mistook you for me and let you slip past.
Fascinating. I debated spitting on his boots. Take your power back. I don't want it. A sly smile.
It doesn't work that way. The power is bound to your life. The only way to get it back would be to kill you, and since I like your company, I'll pass on the offer.
We walked a few steps before he said,
You need to be vigilant about keeping your mental wards up, especially now that you've seen Valaris. If you ever go somewhere else, beyond these lands, and someone slipped into your mind and saw this place...
A muscle quivered in his jaw.
We're called Daemati, those of us who can walk into another person's mind, as if we were going from one room to another. We're rare, and the trait appears as the mother wills it. But there are enough of us scattered throughout the world that many, mostly those in positions of influence, extensively train against our skill set. If you were ever to encounter a Daemati without those shields up, Feyre, they'd take whatever they wanted. A more powerful one could make you their unwitting slave, make you do whatever they wanted, and you'd never know it. My lands remain mystery enough to outsiders that some would find you, among other things, a highly valuable source of information.
Daemati? Was I now one, if I too could do such things? Yet another damned title for people to whisper as I passed. I take it that, in a potential war with Highburn, the king's armies wouldn't even notice strike here. I waved a hand to the city around us. So, what? Your pampered people, those who can't shield their minds, they get your protection and don't have to fight, while the rest of us will bleed? I didn't let him answer, and just increased my pace. A cheap shot, and childish, but inside, I had become like that distant sea, relentlessly churning, tossed about by squalls that tore away any sense of where the surface might be. Rhys kept a step behind for the rest of the walk to the townhouse. Some small part of me whispered that I could survive Amarantha, I could survive leaving Tamlin, I could survive transitioning into this new, strange body. But that empty, cold hole in my chest, I wasn't sure I could survive that. Even in the years I'd been one bad week away from starvation, that part of me had been full of color, of light. Maybe becoming a fairy had broken it. Maybe Amarantha had broken it. Or maybe I had broken it when I shoved that dagger into the hearts of two innocent fairies, and their blood had warmed my hands.
Absolutely not. I sat atop the townhouse's small rooftop garden, my hands shoved deep into the pockets of my overcoat to warm them against the bite in the night air. There was room enough for a few boxed shrubs and a round iron table with two chairs, and me and Rhysand. Around us, the city twinkled, the stars themselves seeming to hang lower, pulsing with ruby and amethyst and pearl.
Above, the full moon set the marble of the buildings and bridges glowing, as if they were all lit from within. Music played, strings and gentle drums, and on either side of the Sidra, golden lights bobbed over riverside walkways dotted with cafes and shops, all open for the night, already packed. Life, so full of life, I could nearly taste it crackling on my tongue. Clothed in black, accented with silver thread, Rhysand crossed his arms and rustled his massive wings as I said, "No."
"The House of Wind is warded against people winnowing inside, exactly like this house, even against High Lords. Don't ask me why or who did it, but the option is either walk up the 10,000 steps, which I really do not feel like doing, Feyre, or fly in."
Moonlight glazed the talon at the apex of each wing. He gave me a slow grin that I hadn't seen all afternoon.
"I promise I won't drop you."
I frowned at the midnight blue dress I'd selected, even with the long sleeves and heavy, luxurious fabric. The plunging V of the neckline did nothing against the cold. I debated wearing the sweater and thicker pants, but had opted for finery over comfort. I already regretted it, even with the coat. But if his inner circle was anything like Tamlin's court, better to wear the more formal attire. I winced at the swath of night between the roof and the mountain residence. "The wind will rip the gown right off." His grin became feline. "I'll take the stairs," I seethed, the anger welcome from the past few hours of numbness as I headed for the door at the end of the roof. Rhys snapped out a wing, blocking my path. Smooth membrane, flecked with a hint of iridescence, I peeled back. "Nuala spent an hour on my hair." An exaggeration, but she had fussed while I sat there in hollow silence, letting her tease the ends into soft curls and pin a section along the top of my head with pretty gold barrettes. But maybe staying inside tonight, alone and quiet, maybe it'd be better than facing these people, than interacting. Rhys's wing curved around me, herding me closer to where I could nearly feel the heat of his powerful body.
"I promise, I won't let the wind destroy your hair."
He lifted a hand as if he might tug on one of those loose curls, then lowered it. "If I'm to decide whether I want to work against Highburn with you, with your inner circle, can't we just meet here?"
"They're all up there already. And besides, the House of Wind has enough space that I won't feel like chucking them all off the mountain."
I swallowed. Sure enough, curving along the top of the center mountain behind us, floors of lights glinted, as if the mountain had been crowned in gold. And between me and that crown of light was a long, long stretch of open air. "You mean," I said, because it might have been the only weapon in my arsenal, "that this townhouse is too small and their personalities are too big, and you're worried I might lose it again?" His wing pushed me closer, a whisper of warmth on my shoulder.
"So what if I am?"
"I'm not some broken doll." Even if this afternoon, that conversation we'd had, what I'd glimpsed through his eyes, said otherwise. But I yielded another step.
"I know you're not, but that doesn't mean I'll throw you to the wolves. If you meant what you said about wanting to work with me to keep Highburn from these lands, keep the wall intact, I want you to meet my friends first. Decide on your own if it's something you can handle. And I want this meeting to be on my terms, not whenever they decide to ambush this house again."
I didn't know you even had friends. Yes, anger, sharpness. It felt good, better than feeling nothing. A cold smile.
"You didn't ask."
Rhysand was close enough now that he slid a hand around my waist, both of his wings encircling me. My spine locked up, a cage. The wings swept back, but he tightened his arm, bracing me for takeoff. Mother save me.
"You say the word tonight, and we come back here, no questions asked. And if you can't stomach working with me, with them, then no questions asked on that either. We can find some other way for you to live here, be fulfilled, regardless of what I need. It's your choice, Feyre."
I debated pushing him on it, on insisting I stay. But stay for what? To sleep?
To avoid a meeting I should most certainly have before deciding what I wanted to do with myself. And to fly, I studied the wings, the arm around my waist. Please don't drop me, and please don't. We shot into the sky, fast as a shooting star. Before my yelp finished echoing, the city had yawned wide beneath us. Reese's hand slid under my knees, while the other wrapped around my back and ribs, and we flapped up, up, up into the star-freckled night, into the liquid dark and singing wind. The city lights dropped away, until Valaris was a rippling velvet blanket littered with jewels, until the music no longer reached even our pointed ears. The air was chill, but no wind other than a gentle breeze brushed my face, even as we soared with magnificent precision for the House of Wind. Reese's body was hard and warm against mine, a solid force of nature crafted and honed for this. Even the smell of him reminded me of the wind, rain and salt, and something citrusy I couldn't name. We swerved into an updraft, rising so fast it was instinct to clutch his black tunic as my stomach clenched. I scowled at the soft laugh that tickled my ear.
I expected more screaming from you. I must not be trying hard enough.
Do not, I hissed, focusing on the approaching tiara of lights in the eternal wall of the mountain. With the sky wheeling overhead and the lights shooting past below, up and down became mirrors until we were sailing through a sea of stars. Something tight in my chest eased a fraction of its grip.
When I was a boy, Reese said in my ear, I'd sneak out of the House of Wind by leaping out my window, and I'd fly and fly all night, just making loops around the city, the river, the sea. Sometimes I still do.
Your parents must have been thrilled.
My father never knew, and my mother.
A pause.
She was Illyrian. Some nights, when she caught me right as I leaped out the window, she'd scold me, and then jump out herself to fly with me until dawn.
She sounds lovely, I admitted.
She was, he said, and those two words told me enough about his past that I didn't pry.
A maneuver had us rising higher until we were in direct line with a broad balcony, gilded by the light of golden lanterns. At the far end, built into the Red Mountain itself, two glass doors were already open, revealing a large but surprisingly casual dining room, carved from the stone and accented with rich wood. Each chair fashioned, I noted, to accommodate wings. Reese's landing was as smooth as his takeoff, though he kept an arm beneath my shoulders as my knees buckled at the adjustment. I shook off his touch and faced the city behind us. I'd spent so much time squatting in trees that heights had lost their primal terror long ago. But the sprawl of the city, worse, the vast expanse of dark beyond the sea. Maybe I remained a human fool to feel that way, but I had not realized the size of the world. The size of Prithian, if a city this large could remain hidden from Amarantha, from the other courts. Rhysand was silent beside me. Yet after a moment, he said,
Out with it.
I lifted a brow.
You say what's on your mind, one thing, and I'll say one too.
I shook my head and turned back to the city, but Reese said,
I'm thinking that I spent 50 years locked under the mountain, and I'd sometimes let myself dream of this place, but I never expected to see it again. I'm thinking that I wish I had been the one who slaughtered her. I'm thinking that if war comes, it might be a long while yet before I get to have a night like this.
He slid his eyes to me, expectant. I didn't bother asking again how he'd kept this place from her, not when he was likely to refuse to answer. So I said, Do you think war will be here that soon?
This was a no-questions-asked invitation. I told you three things.
Tell me one. I stared toward the open world, the city and the restless sea and the dry winter night. Maybe it was some shred of courage or recklessness, or I was so high above everything that no one save Reese and the wind could hear. But I said, I'm thinking that I must have been a fool in love to allow myself to be shown so little of the Spring Court. I'm thinking there's a great deal of that territory I was never allowed to see or hear about. And maybe I would have lived in ignorance forever like some pet. I'm thinking...
The words became choked. I shook my head as if I could clear the remaining ones away, but I still spoke them. I'm thinking that I was a lonely, hopeless person, and I might have fallen in love with the first thing that showed me a hint of kindness and safety. And I'm thinking maybe he knew that, maybe not actively, but maybe he wanted to be that person for someone, and maybe that worked for who I was before. Maybe it doesn't work for who, what I am now. There. The words, hateful and selfish and ungrateful for all Tamlin had done. The thought of his name clanged through me. Only yesterday afternoon I had been there. No, I wouldn't think about it. Not yet. Rhysand said,
That was five. Looks like I owe you two thoughts.
He glanced behind us.
Later.
Because the two winged males from earlier were standing in the doorway, grinning. Chapter 16. Rhys sauntered toward the two males standing by the dining room doors, giving me the option to stay or join. One word, he'd promised, and we could go. Both of them were tall, their wings tucked in tight to powerful, muscled bodies, covered in plated dark leather that reminded me of the worn scales of some serpentine beast. Identical long swords were each strapped down the column of their spines, the blades beautiful in their simplicity. Perhaps I needn't have bothered with the fine clothes after all. The slightly larger of the two, his face masked in shadow, chuckled and said,
Come on, Feyre, we don't bite, unless you ask us to.
Surprise sparked through me, setting my feet moving. Rhys slid his hands into pockets.
The last I heard, Cassian, no one has ever taken you up on that offer.
The second one snorted, the faces of both males at last illuminated as they turned toward the golden light of the dining room, and I honestly wondered why no one hadn't. If Rhysand's mother had also been Illyrian, then its people were blessed with unnatural good looks. Like their High Lord, the males, warriors, were dark-haired, tan-skinned, but unlike Rhys, their eyes were hazel and fixed on me as I at last stepped close to the waiting House of Wind behind them. That was where any similarities between the three of them halted. Cassian surveyed Rhys from head to foot, his shoulder-length black hair shifting with the movement.
So fancy tonight, brother. And you made poor Feyre dress up, too.
He winked at me. There was something rough-hewn about his features, like he'd been made of wind and earth and flame, and all these civilized trappings were little more than an inconvenience. But the second male, the more classically beautiful of the two, even the light shied from the elegant planes of his face, with good reason. Beautiful, but near unreadable. He'd be the one to look out for, the knife in the dark. Indeed, an obsidian-hilted hunting knife was sheathed at his thigh, its dark scabbard embossed with a line of silver runes I'd never seen before. Rhys said,
This is Asriel, my spymaster.
Not surprising. Some buried instinct had me checking that my mental shields were intact, just in case.
Welcome,
was all Asriel said, his voice low, almost flat, as he extended a brutally scarred hand to me. The shape of it was normal, but the skin, it looked like it had been swirled and smudged and rippled. Burns. They must have been horrific if even their immortal blood had not been able to heal them. The leather plates of his light armor flowed over most of it, held by a loop around his middle finger. Not to conceal, I realized, as his hand breached the chill night air between us. No, it was to hold.